Our guest now spent 10 years working as a teacher in Brunei, but it's her experiences outside the classroom that are having a lasting impact. Jackie McLaren ended up being deeply involved with the Penan, a semi-nomadic tribe on the island of Borneo whose way of life's been disrupted by deforestation and palm oil plantations. Spurred to action by seeing what a lack of medical care was doing to the tribe, she started fundraising to upgrade the local clinic and help them better access food. She also encouraged them to trade goods, and that continued when she returned to New Zealand. Jackie founded Borneo Bags, which sells hand-woven products from Penan women, helping support them and their families. Kia ora, Jackie. Welcome.
Hello, Catherine. Good morning.
Thanks for talking to me. You're most welcome. What a wonderful story. Tell me about why you went to this part of the world to teach and then coming to know these people who've got such a special place in your heart.
Well, to be honest, I applied for a lot of jobs overseas as soon as my children were at university here. And this was just really the only place that offered me a job that wasn't in the middle of a war or some terrible kind of corrupt government. So that's why I went off to Borneo. But of course, I discovered it to be an absolute paradise for a biology teacher, which I was.
And, you weren't travelling, Jackie. Did you apply from New Zealand or were you travelling and applying?
No, I applied from New Zealand. I'd said to my girls, as soon as you're either in full-time employment or university, I need to leave. I'd been in Motueka, teaching there at the high school, for about 18 years. And I'd found it quite hard to stay in one place, to be honest, for that length of time. And I was ready for a new adventure.
Wonderful. So serendipity, in a way, brings you to the country, starts this adventure, and what unfolds?
Well, it started off with the school doing a fundraising, which was an annual event. People auctioned experiences, and I'd put up an experience where I would take people into the jungle to show them picture plants and other fauna and flora. And someone else had advertised a trip into the interior to see this nomadic tribe, the Penan. I couldn't actually make it to the auction as I was on duty. Apart from being a teacher there, I was a live-in housemistress in a boys' boarding house. So the man who was organising the auction said he would bid on my behalf up to a certain point. And when it was obvious someone was bidding against me, he said to that person, look, stop bidding against Jackie. I'm sure she'll take you with her. And so that's how I won this trek into the interior. We didn't actually go for another year or so. There was a lot of planning to be done. But that is how I initially came across this tribe and saw their living conditions, saw what was happening as the rainforest was being cut down. We traveled through what looked like lunar landscapes, and often being overtaken by big logging trucks when we were on the logging tracks. But we actually did a lot of travel just trekking or up rivers. In fact, the rivers are their roads through most of Borneo. That's how you get around in a long boat. Nowadays, they actually have a motor on the end, but back then it was quite often just by sort of paddle or punting power. So, yes, that's how I met them.
Could you see immediately what was happening to their lives and their homes with the amount of commercial operations going on?
Well, it would have been very hard to miss it. And the contrast between these desert landscapes, which were just deserted, really. There was no regrowth of anything once the forest had been cut down. I do believe that it takes a few decades for other undergrowth to start again, but probably thousands of years before an actual rainforest could redevelop. But at least there would be some regeneration and the animals would start coming back. But once the corporates got involved with putting palm oil plantations in, then there is actually no hope for any regeneration. So anybody who was living in the surrounds, the animals would be scared off completely as well. So not only were the plants which they used for their medical supplies and food, but also the animals which were a part of their food supply as well, they were also gone. And then with the actions of the foresting, the machinery, they did uproot a lot of this soil, which is has a very tenuous hold anyway. It was just a very thin layer of topsoil over rock. And as soon as the roots of these forest trees were gone, the whole lot would end up being washed into the rivers. So the rivers would get blocked with mud and be diverted. You get horrible flooding. You couldn't see through the water anymore. The fish were dying. And that was another of their protein sources cut off. And it was very easy to see all this as you actually traveled across pristine rainforest into these deforested areas.
Tell me about how you built such strong connections with these people and their story.
Well, of course, when I first met them, they were strangers. But I actually met them before I went on this trek. I met some members of the tribe. I'd gone with the mother of one of the children that I taught over the border into Sarawak to an outhouse, really, called the Rumasakit or the sick room. And this was built on the outskirts of the hospital in a small town called Limbang. And anyone who couldn't afford accommodation or treatment was placed in this shack. And she had brought some items back from Australia with her to help the a boy who had cerebral palsy. He happened to be the son of a headman of one of the Penan villages. So she'd asked me if I'd like to come with her, and I did. So I could see exactly what was happening to these poor people. They were coming down from the jungle. They had no money because they don't live in a society where money means anything. They couldn't pay for anything, so they were just slung into this building. The floor covering consisted of broken bits of filthy lino. The outhouse there, or the toilet facilities, were almost non-existent. The pipes had rusted through, so any water coming through was full of dirt and bits of metal, very unhygienic, and there was no privacy for them. Apart from this young lad with cerebral palsy, there was another woman she'd come to see, and she'd had TB a year or so before. And TB is one of those illnesses that's unfortunately endemic on Borneo. They're very frightened of vaccinations. They don't understand it. And unfortunately, it's very common amongst the tribespeople. And this young lady had had TB. She'd come for treatment. She'd been given antibiotics. And TB is a very antibiotic-heavy illness. You need antibiotics, I think, twice a day for a couple of years. Certainly, that was the case back then. And she'd obviously gone back to the jungle with a supply. In order to have these renewed, she'd have had to have kept coming back to the hospital to get them renewed, which, of course, she can't do. She didn't have the energy. She could barely walk. And she didn't have the money to pay for a lift in a logging company truck. So the disease got worse. She finally got back to the hospital and they'd removed a lot of her lung. And by the time I saw her, that was all healed. But she had a pressure sore on her back, which was so big, you could honestly put your fist into it. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And it was totally septic. And the woman I'd gone across, and I, we went over to the hospital. We managed to get one of the nurses there, bring her back to this Rumasakit and say to her, look, this needs treating. And the physiotherapist, the parent, she actually had just cotton wool balls and saline solution, cleaned it out, packed it up and said, you need to do this every day. And of course, the woman at this stage, she was actually paralyzed from the waist down. This had eaten through her spine by this stage. And after we left, we talked about what we could do. We decided to raise some money to get her to the hospital in Kuching, which we did, but she died. She died in the hospital. So I guess that was a bit of a spur for me to think, look, they deserve better than this when they come down for medical treatment. And I could get across the border It was only about maybe 2 hours' drive, and I could at least bring them some food. I could go to the markets and buy fish, fruit, vegetables, and so on. Instead of seeing them drink things like diluted Coca-Cola, which they were feeding through the baby's bottles to their infants, thinking that this was something that was nutritional because it was a Western product.
I know you were very committed to them for 10 years. You know, I know you did a lot of work with the hospital, got refurbishments done, did all sorts of work. But what's happened subsequently? After 10 years, I think, or around 10 years, you leave and you've kept up this connection with these people and their lives. Where did the idea to trade or to encourage them to trade their goods from that led to the business, I guess, or the enterprise we're about to talk about, and people can see images on the website. Where did that sort of part of the story begin?
Well, I had just been going across and using my own money to try and buy them some nutritious food, and I would teach them about hygiene. They were not used to using plastics, for example. Everything that they had in the jungle was biodegradable. A couple of parents came on board with me who spoke Malay, and many of them could speak Malay. They actually spoke a different language called Penan, which is quite different to Malay. It's not a written language, but luckily they were beginning to learn Malay because their children had to attend Malay schools. So the children were bringing it home and teaching it to their parents, so we could at least communicate. So I said to them, if you can bring your woven products down or your anything you make, really, I will buy them off you and take them back to my school. And the parents of my students, two of them who were helping me, they would take them back to their army camp or back to their own settlements and try and sell them there. So that's what we did, and it very quickly grew. It was amazing how quickly it took off. And it was quite difficult then because I didn't get that much time to go across, and they would be waiting for me with all these things. And I only had a little car. And of course, at customs, as I was coming back through the checkpoint, they started to get very, very edgy about it. So I got a letter from our headmaster to say that this was all raising money for this tribe. And on the whole, customs were great about it until once I brought back some blowpipes, and they weren't happy about that because this was a weapon. So those were confiscated off me. That was the only time we had any trouble. And to be honest, Catherine, I pretty well did what I could at my school. And it was the two parents who came on board with me, the two Malay-speaking parents. One was a Chinese Malay, and the other one was from the Malaysian Peninsula. And they took it to the next level by suggesting to the Penan that they use, instead of the native rattan, they use the polypropylene pallet strapping, which was readily available in Limbang. When they came down to the Rumasakit, we could buy it and give it to them there. And they started to learn to weave in that. And then that gave us a product that we could ask for different designs and different commodities, perhaps, like beach bags, laptop bags, table mats, all kinds of things, which they naturally would never have produced themselves, but that we could sell more easily. So that's how it took off.
So now you're based in Auckland. I think it's by appointment only in is it Mount Eden you're in, Jackie, the little store? Borneo Bags is a relatively recent venture. How does it work now?
Well, the house that I live in, I live upstairs and then downstairs. An awful lot of it is devoted to storing bags. Yesterday, we had 25 boxes arrive from two of the weaving families that I work directly with. They'd put them in the Malaysian post, and we'd got them through customs, paid duty, GST, and so on, and they were finally delivered yesterday. So it's a mixture of excitement and almost being overwhelmed. So many different items, some of which we can put onto the website, but many of which are one-offs. And I have to think of other ways of selling them. So my two daughters, who are now with their own partners and both have toddlers, they set up the website. And they, one of them in particular, actually Sally, she's absolutely indispensable to me in running this business. And she devotes her Tuesdays and Thursdays to the business. She comes round and she'll manage the social media and the website and the pricing, unpacking and so on, that goes on with that. So, yes, I have people come around to my house and they'll buy directly from the store. But I actually am always looking for retailers who might be willing to support us. And we try and make it profitable for them, because if it's not, of course, then we won't really get much interest. But it seems to be taking off. And all I really need to do is get in the car with some of these bags and go door knocking.
It's an incredible story. And I'm just looking, gosh, I'm looking at these beautiful images on the website, the beautiful dresses. Goodness, that could be the next line. just stunning. And as we said, for a relatively recent venture in its form as Borneo Bags, it's really, 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 really exciting time for you. And are you hoping to get back perhaps now the borders are open again?
Well, yes, I still have my ticket with Malaysian Airlines, which I bought a couple of months before we went into lockdown. But as yet, it's still no use to me. If I land in Brunei, I have to do a day's quarantine, but I still cannot travel across into Malaysia, into Sabah and Sarawak, which is where the Penang are. So I'm biding my time for the moment. And thinking maybe October, maybe by then I'll be able to get back. But, you know, Catherine, with WhatsApp, I'm amazed how I can communicate with the weavers. They, the two main ladies who pack up all the craft that their family make, they both have WhatsApp. So they will come into town and contact me, and we can then just talk directly with each other. And it's absolutely fantastic. I would never have believed that was possible when I was there 15 years ago.
Jackie, thank you. Those who want to see more can see the images on the webpage, and also there's a link through to Borneo Bags, which is the enterprise running now in Auckland.